Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastama Vishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, bottom of 48. Vijaya, kindly explain what is meant by avoiding the association of those who are materialistic or inimical to Sri Krishna and his devotees, the 11th limb. Raghunath Das Babaji, the growth of bhava intensifies one's pure devotion to the Lord. As long as the devotee has not yet attained the stage of bhava, he has to shun the company of atheists and non-devotees. Sangha implies attachment. The various exchanges which take place in the course of one's necessary with dealings with others are not sangha. Sangha means to be attached, attracted and attached to the companionship of a particular person. Thus, the company of those persons who are inimical to the Supreme Lord must be avoided strictly. And so the growth of bhava intensifies one's pure devotion. Right, so we see is that the intensifies. So pure devotion can manifest there from the stage of nishta, right? But it's intensified when the growth of bhava. So the beginning growth of bhava, the beginning stage of bhava is from ruchi. It means bhava itself has its position, but it's like the preliminaries of bhava is ruchi and asakti. So the growth of that intensifies pure devotion. But still, until one is liberated, right? Until one comes to the stage of bhava, why it says bhava is because one's liberated at that time. Right, so there's no anartas anymore. One's off that platform. Until then, one has to avoid inimical association. Right? Yes.
So when you reach bhava, you can go to the pub and chill out.
Why would you chill? You'd be preaching.
I'm trying to figure out why he says has not yet attained the states of bhava.
Because the conditioning is there. See, conditioning is there. So one may be attracted by that materialistic mood. On the platform of bhava, then there's no attraction to that materialistic mood. Right? Does that make sense?
So the distinction is you have to be aware of it before bhava. Bhava, it just...
Yes, you have to be aware, because in bhava you're absorbed in Krishna. But the point is you're liberated, so there's no secondary weakness of heart, right? And the primary weakness of heart basically has also been removed. Now it's just the slight flavors that are left just to make sure until it gets to complete intensity of absorption in devotion, right? In samadhi. Does that make sense? So the devotee then is careful of that. So this means association doesn't mean your interaction. Association means what you are attracted to and attached to, that person, right? Mm. Does that make sense? Mm. So if those persons are devotees, then that's okay. Mm. Does that make sense? If those devotees, then that's all right. If they're not devotees, then that's a problem, right? Because by associating with them, then naturally, then what they like to do and what their interests are, then you may be attracted by that. And if it's materialistic or it's inimical to Krishna, it'll be a problem. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now, Vijaya, what persons are considered inimical to Krishna? Raghunath Das Babaji. There are four types of inimical non-believers. Persons who have no devotion for Krishna, grossly materialistic persons overtly attached to women and wine, persons whose heart are poisoned by atheism and impersonalistic Mayavad thoughts, and persons who are engrossed in fruitive activities. Their company has to be rejected. Right? No devotion for Krishna, grossly materialistic persons overly attached to women and wine, persons whose hearts are poisoned by atheism and materialistic Mayavads, and persons who are engrossed in fruitive activities. Right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So basically, it's your demons, your Mayaya Pratigyana, your Mudha, and your how you say Naradama. Yeah. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but these are the points. They have no devotion to Krishna. They're overly materialistic, that means on the karma platform. Or they're over materialistic on the karma platform, I mean, jnanic platform, right? The Mayavad, atheism, like that. So when the karma and the jnana become extreme, then that's there. But even lighter than that means, even that's just they have the attracted, they're engrossed in fruitive activities, or they have no devotion, right? Because the point is, they may be nice people, but there's no devotion. Still, you have to be careful, right? Vijaya, how can a devotee curb the desire to get many disciples and followers, as well as to initiate unworthy disciples, the 12th limb, Raghunathas Babaji. The insatiable greed for money drives some persons to collect many disciples. This is a serious fault. Increasing the number of disciples forces the person to initiate many unworthy and faithless candidates, thus committing a huge offense. Only sincere persons with actual Shraddha are fit to be initiated. So in other words, one's not initiated to get followers, so that there's money, there's facilities, there's support. One's initiating because someone is sincere in the devotional line, and therefore they're initiated so that they may advance nicely in Krishna consciousness. That's the only purpose. Right?
Mm.
That makes sense. So that's the point. So in other words, one has to be careful about greed for facility, money, followers like this. Vijay Kumar, what is the meaning of ostentatiously displaying external pomp and celebration over endeavoring to construct costly temples and monasteries, the 13th limb, Babaji? One should live simply and engage in devotional service to the Lord. One should not become attached to great pomp or to activities that require unnecessary endeavor. Such endeavors will distract the heart of neophytes from the worship of the Lord. Right. So that's the defining. So in other words, something that is over one's ability and all that. Does that make sense? If one has the ability, then it's not overly done. Right? Like we see is that many times these kings, they had the ability, they had the piety, and they would do very big, like Yudhishthira, the Rajasuya sacrifice, right? And that's so, you don't get more pomp than that, but it's not ostentatious, because it's not it's not cultivating the false ego, right? Because the point of when there's ostentatious means that it's dealing with it, cultivating the false ego. Right, it's for your own prestige. But if it's for the service of the Lord, that's just what's supposed to be done. It's one's duties. Then it's not a problem. Like here, we're building a very large temple, right, bigger than anybody else in the basically Gaudiya or Vaishnava line, right. So, but it's not ostentatious because this is the order. This is what's supposed to be done, right. And it's something that Westerners work on that principle of if it's big, it's better, right. Like that, like it's a, yeah. If something is good, more is better. So that's always a problem in Westerners taking medicine, because if a little bit's good, taking more is better, right? So they always run into problems this way, right? So, it's just the nature. So therefore, you're just engaging the nature. Otherwise, to do something small would be not the nature. So then that wouldn't be engaging the body, mind, and words fully. Does that make sense? Because otherwise someone may say, no, but you're unnecessary. But it's not unnecessary. People are attracted. It's preaching. Like that.
Right. He mentions that
He will distract the heart of neophytes?
Yes.
Does it mean that neophytes, they have this tendency to do those kind of things? Or
yes, for sure. For sure. I can remember one Vyas Puja, one. They had, that means at the time, I think they had spent, they had, you know, raised 30,000 rupees. This was back in the early 80s, maybe even late 70s. So in those days, that was a lot of money. I mean, in those days, we probably ran the whole Gurukul, 120 kids and stuff, with 15,000 rupees, maybe even less. That would have been a few years ago. 10,000 rupees, you could maintain. So that was 3 months of maintenance of the whole school. Let me say, we didn't do it, I'm just giving a comparison. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could maintain 140 people, you know, 3 meals a day, clothes, medicine, and all that. So this was 3 months' worth. So they had done it. It was like a wedding arrangement, you know, all the flowers, everything like that. And then the ceremony was performed. But as soon as the ceremony was performed, it was interesting because there was, then after there was prasad, and then, you know, as the guru and the senior devotees are kind of like leaving the prasad area going, you notice that they're already taking down the flowers and everything. It was kind of strange because if it's a festival, you know, you'd leave it up for the day, take it down the next day, or, you know, maybe at night take it down or something, but not right obvious there. But then it was kind of like found out is that they had done something big before, because we were the only place, you know, that had two gurus. Everywhere else had one. So then the Vyas Pooja for the other guru was bigger. You know, and so they had to just do it bigger than that because our guru is better. You understand? So it's just this competition. It wasn't that, oh, they're doing something very nice to please Krishna, so then we should, you know, endeavor to do something nice also. It was more of a prestige. So that's what it's talking about. It distracts the neophyte. Because the Madhyama can do something big because it's for preaching, because it's not for his own prestige. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So if it's there, it's the order. Lord Nityananda Prabhu said there'd be a big temple. So therefore, now we're building the big temple. Like that. You know what I'm saying? Locally, then, the Yogpeet is a big temple. But as far as Western is concerned, that's not a big temple. You know what I'm saying? You know, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, that's the point. Okay. Vijaya. What is giving up accumulating many books, quoting from and analyzing extensively from non-devotional sources, the 14th limb? Raghunath Das Babaji. The scriptures are a bottomless, shoreless expanse. However, one should focus one's studies upon those spiritual subjects that interest one. Collect the relevant books and scrutinize them thoroughly. No one can master a subject if he reads bits and scraps haphazardly from myriads of literature. This is especially relevant in the study of bhakti. Undivided attention when reading the bhakti literature can alone produce a comprehensive grasp of sambandha, which is indispensable for one's spiritual progress. Furthermore, one should understand and explain the straightforward direct meaning of a text. Too much analysis and extrapolation only lead to misconception. Right. So, in other words, there's unlimited scripture, so one shouldn't therefore try to read everything just out of interest, because that's jigyasu, so that's the neophyte element. So those areas that interest you, read those, but read them in depth. Right? Does that make sense? So whatever is the aspect, read that nicely so you know that nicely, because only by taking the scripture, reading the scripture nicely, then the Lord is pleased, and that devotional shakti is there. One that understanding, because we remember, is an understanding doesn't come from our own mundane intelligence. It comes from being imbued with the internal potency. The material intelligence, no matter how great, can't understand devotion, which is far beyond. Right? You can't understand unlimited with a limited resource. So therefore, the scriptures, what their knowledge is unlimited. Krishna is unlimited. His internal potency is unlimited. So only by their grace can you understand that, right? So therefore, focus in those areas that, I mean, if you have a few more areas, then great. But don't just, you know, here and there for just because it looks interesting. You know what I'm saying? means that something is there, but one has to be very, very careful about that. And also here it says straightforward meaning. So what it's specifically saying, that's what is understood, right? You don't try to get into so many funny little things like that. Yes.
I heard that a wise man knows a little about everything and everything about a little.
Wise man knows everything, means a little about everything and everything about a little. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Because point is you have means you have to take something to depth. And then from that depth, if you know other things, even a little bit, you can understand the principles of them. Because the point is, once you've studied something in depth, you understand the principles. Then you can apply the principles to everything else. Now you know the detail in that one area you've studied. You don't know the detail in the others. Right? Otherwise, then, how much memory do you have? Because detail, it's a matter of memory, how much you can understand. Right? But principle, that's not a matter of memory. That's a matter of realization. So, therefore, even understanding a little bit about the detail of one subject, you can see the principles, and therefore, then you can work with it. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. Some areas should be studied in depth, though others, if there's interest, then they can be studied. But the point is you can't study everything in depth. Does that make sense? Right. Those that can, they're unique. Right, they're called acharyas, right? But generally, they don't even do that. But sometimes they do, just to, you know, impress the smartest, so that they'll take them seriously. Right? Like I remember, one devotee was trying to. He was telling me he was trying to establish a kirtan program at this ashram. You know, so it's some kind of yogi ashram kind of thing like that. And he was talking to the head of the ashram. And, you know, the head of the ashram, he was a little wary about the Hare Krishnas, because they always called them Mayavadis and, you know, bogus, nonsense, rascals, you know, all this kind of stuff, you know, like that. So then, you know, he said, okay, just listen for 10 minutes on that. And they started talking, and because they do, as he went into the medium, he saw that they were doing some, seminars on Vedanta. And I think the yoga shastras or something. So the devotee knew like that, you know. So then he mentioned something about it. And then they got into a conversation there. And then they started talking about the five levels of consciousness. And then the yogi asked the devotee, says, you know, so you know this is coming from Taittiriya Upanishad. He says, yes. He says, so have you read that? And the devotee looked at him and says, I haven't memorized. Right? Because he had gone to the Gurukul and he had memorized it in the Gurukul. Right? And so the guy was so impressed. So then it was kind of like, okay, you're not one of the ordinary Hare Krishnas. You can talk philosophy and that, and we're not just demon rascal nonsense. Or if we are, at least you can explain it. Why? Why are we demon rascals? You know? So the point is you know something in depth, then you have that proper vision. Then if you, by your own interest, have some knowledge in everything, so many things, that's fine. But the point is you can't study everything in depth, you know, to that. But if you study everything lightly and never study anything in depth, that's what's to be avoided. To think that I know so many things, therefore I'm knowledgeable. No, you know one thing in depth, you're knowledgeable. Then if you know other things, then that's added, right? The levels we see is that Rupa Goswami defines the levels of knowledge of the gopis, right? So Radharani has the great. She's the greatest. She's a master in everything, all knowledge, right? Because she is knowledge. So then, but other gopis, they have three levels. That of something that they're familiar with, something that they're expert in, and something that they're master of, right? So there has to be mastery in something. Then there'll be the areas where you're expert, so you know the details. Right, mastery means you know the details to the point where you understand the principles. You know, expertise means you know the knowledge and its application very well. And that general knowledge means there's an understanding kind of the area, you're familiar with it. So you can work with it if somebody else is an expert or a master. You can assist. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So like that, then one should understand. It says here, Undivided attention or reading the bhakti literature can alone produce a comprehensive grasp of sambandha, which is indispensable for one's spiritual progress. So that understanding of sambandha is, it says here, essential, indispensable. Right? If you don't understand who you are, who God is, what the material world and your relationship, then there'll be a mistake. Right? At some point we'll think, okay, God's in charge of all this, but this area is mine. Right? Because that's what all these different philosophies do. You deify the Lord. You know, so then that's you put him back. So then this area that he's not touching, that's mine. Right? You know, so it has a double advantage. Right? Means one is that I don't have enough knowledge to see how God's involved with the world, and at the same time, because bad things happen, how it's not God's fault. So therefore, to avoid faulting God, he's not part of this. Right? Even though that in itself is insulting, but it doesn't evoke my emotion because I don't have enough knowledge to know that it's insulting. Right? The other thing is the sense he's not involved with it, it's all mine. Hey. You know, like that. So, you know, win-win, right? God's a great guy and I got great facility, right? You know, so it works out for everybody, right? You know, and everybody goes home patting each other on the back. It was a great time, right? So does that make sense?
Just right? Have to avoid the Hare Krishnas on the way.
Yeah, you just have to avoid bumping into the Hare Krishnas, right? Because they somehow or another have these strange concept that, you know, you know, if it's not devotion, it's not good. Okay. Okay, too much analysis and extrapolation only lead to misconceptions. So you want to keep it to the point, trying to get what's the essence to it. In other words, what's the difference? It doesn't mean you can't analyze a point deeply. It means you're trying to get to the essence. You're not trying to think of how many ways can we put this together. You know what I'm saying? You know, we're discussing, okay, you know, okay, here you put the thing here, then you put the frosting, then you put another layer, then you put more frosting, and you put decorations on the top, okay? So, now we can discuss, now what is the kind of the cake, the layer, how much thickness it is, this and that, what is the texture, therefore, because of that, what kind of things you can put, what kind of frosting, you can get into great detail, but we're not saying, well, we can put it together like that. Hey, we could also put a huge amount of frosting, stick all the layers of the cake together, and then put frosting around. Or we could just put frosting on the inside and nothing on the outside. Or we could cut it up in little pieces. You know, you can come up with, we could stick it on edge, you know, like that. Now, that would be a really far out thing. You know, everybody's seen a cake like this. Who's ever seen a cake on edge, you know? Then we could get, you know, the frosting on the top's the best. This way you put it on edge, you got frosting on the top on both sides, like that. You know what I'm saying? This is extravagant. You're just going on, and it's basically useless. Well, that might be interesting. A cake on the edge. The only thing is, how would you cut it or sort of serve it or something like that?
That's a secondary consideration.
Yeah, no, that would be the more difficult. Unless, of course, you know, you've made this cake for one of those, you know, the nerds at one of those what do you call it? You know, those Frodo programs. You know, where they all go and dress up and they have their swords and stuff like that. So you could come out with your sword and go. Then it would be great. But if it's not at one of those things, then you know, forget it.
Alright.
Yes.
Once you've got the principle, the point of the application.
Yes, because the point is the nexus application. While this other thing of too much analysis and extrapolation is not for the point of application, it's just for the point of intellectual fun. You know what I'm saying? That's the difference. Is that speculation means the taste is out of the analysis rather than the taste is in having analyzed, understood it, and now understanding how to apply it. So that's why when we say pari prashna, it means inquiring submissively how to understand the knowledge so that it can be applied, because the next step is sevaya, right? That means that knowledge is complete. You want to know. You inquire in such a way that you can learn how to apply it, and then you actually apply it. Right? So these ones where you've said something and then they just oppose it and argue and that, there's not going to be any application. It's just, you know, intellectual, you know, battle. So as you remember from Manu, Brahmins like that are in the mode of passion. Right? They're the Brahmins who go with kings. So the kings and Brahmins that like to argue, they're considered in the mode of passion. Right, because it's not about applying it; it's about winning. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like that. Okay. Vijaya. Does that make sense? Because it's always important to be able to tell the difference between something here, because one can say, no, but we're contradicting all these things. Right? It means we're going out, we're preaching, we're talking to so many people, we're moving in the world. So how is that not bad association? Because you're not attracted and attached to it. So therefore you're giving us, either you're doing ordinary things and just getting by, or you're giving association. Right? Not doing things with pomp and us, but we're building a big temple. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever we do it big. But it's, you know, said, but it's being done, you know, for preaching for the Lord and from the Madhyama platform. Right? Or here is that we're studying, we're analyzing. Why would not, you know, having a in-depth classes on Shastra, why wouldn't that be this? No, because you're trying to understand how to apply it in your life. So therefore it's not. You understand? So that's why one has to analyze to the point where one can apply it. Otherwise, then it'll create misconception. Mm-hmm. Right? Raghunath Das Babaji. What was the question? Did we ask the question?
No.
We just turned the page. Okay. Vijaya. What is meant by not being miserly, neglectful, and capricious in ordinary material dealings? The 15th item. Raghunath Das Babaji. To maintain the body, it is necessary to procure proper food, shelter, and clothing. If these things are not available, one suffers. In addition, if one has acquired them and they are lost, one also suffers. When the devotee has to endure such reversals, he must not succumb to despair and anxiety. Rather, he should peacefully pray to the Supreme Lord and remember him with a steady heart. Right? So, very different approach. Right? Because here is that, you know, the miserly, neglectful, capricious material. So the point is that if the body, you know, the body is not, you know, food, shelter, clothing is not proper, one suffers. So one shouldn't be suffering, right? The point is, Prabhupada says comfortable means not uncomfortable. It doesn't mean that it's luxurious. It just means you're not uncomfortable because it works. It's what's required, right? So if you don't have that, you suffer. So you want to avoid that, because if you're suffering, then that can be a distraction. You know, it says, you know, at the same time, if you don't take care of them, means in other words, if you don't make the endeavor, right, if you're miserly, then you suffer. And if you're not careful about it, you're negligent, then you lose them, you suffer. Right? In other words, if you belong to Krishna, so the stuff connected to you is also Krishna's, then why would you not take care of it? Right, this false sense of renunciation is you don't care, but the point is it's Krishna's. Right? Then the last point is that, but at the same time, is even you're making these proper endeavors, still things don't happen and things are lost. So in that position of suffering, you don't succumb to lamentation and anxiety and all these different things like that, because that's somehow or another how Krishna's arranging. He's taking care. Does that make sense? So from either side, you're not miserly on the spiritual and you're not miserly on the material. Right? You don't take things for granted. You're not neglectful. Does that make sense? So in other words, one just properly what's required gets. You know? Does that make sense? But in that process of trying to acquire it, if it doesn't work, it happens. Right? Does that make sense?
Maharaj,
yes.
Is that mentality the mode of goodness and force?
Yes. Yes. Because mode of passion, you want it because, you know, you want the benefit from it. Mode of goodness is just what you're supposed to do. The body requires this, so you take care of it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, I remember, it's one devotee, out, you know, it means going up, you know, Muktinath, Nepal, right? So you go from Pokhara up to Muktinath, so you walk that way. So along the way is you have just the local kind of places to stay that the locals stay at. But you also have tourist places, right? So in the tourist place, then you have, you know, so many people, all these Westerners and everything like that. But it's very cold at night there. Right, because you're up in the Himalayas. So then the thing was, is the generally the people come, you go into the place, you sit around the fire, you eat something, you get into bed and go to sleep, right? You don't hang out. But these tourist places are so big that if you sit anywhere but by the fire, it's freezing cold, right? So then, sitting there, preaching to the people, but you don't have the clothes for it being cold, because it's not cold in the day, it's not cold next to the fire, it's not cold in bed. So this is a new thing, right? So you're there and you're preaching. So they ask questions and you can answer any question. So they're impressed by that, but what they're not impressed by is that you're cold, right? So it's kind of like, to them, it's like false renunciation. It means that, to be a Hare Krishna, I have to freeze, then I'm not interested. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is you take care of these things. Then it works, you know. If to be a Hare Krishna, you have to wear two different colors of socks, then, you know, I can't be a Hare Krishna. My socks got to match, you know, stuff like that, you know. Does that make sense? You know, so the point is to be not neglectful. It's nice that they're so not worried about their social prestige and this and that. They can be so renounced and the lack of possession. That's fine. But at the same time, it should still match. I remember in the 70s, there was basically, kind of like two kinds of temples. It means two arrangements for how they managed it. One was that nobody had any clothes of their own, right? You know, you just threw all the clothes in the wash, and then they were washed, someone would wash them, and then dhotis were put in one place, you know, then, you know, socks in another, and this and that. And so you just, as you needed, you took. So naturally, you know, they matched less. Either if you didn't care, then it didn't match, or if you were there last. In other words, it had great advantage to get up first, right? Like that. You know, in other temples, then you had, this was yours. But in any case, even then, still, if you mixed up the socks, you lost one and this and that. So the problem was is that then it wouldn't be worried about. So it's nice in that one could be that detached and everything to function there. But at the same time, for preaching, people appreciate it if the socks match. Right? They can relate to it. Right? Does that make sense? That, I mean, the smart temple president would just buy one kind of sock. You know, you go down to Costco's, you buy, a box of that, you know, like that. So everybody has the same sock. So it doesn't matter. It's like Einstein. He had five suits exactly the same. So it didn't matter. He always looked the same, and it didn't matter even if they got mixed up. He always, it was right, you know. That. Okay, Vijaya, how may one overcome the numbing grip of sorrow, frustration, and distress, the 16th limb? Right, you see, they naturally one follows the others because you don't get involved in that. You take care nicely, but in taking care nicely, sometimes it doesn't go right. So not going right, then there may be lamentation and sorrow. So now, one should not be overcome by that. That's the next item. Okay? Raghunathas Babaji. How can the mind dominated by lamentation, fear, anger, greed, envy, etc., meditate upon Sri Krishna? A devotee may become afflicted by lamentation and illusion because of the death of a family member, or because a coveted desire remains unfulfilled. But he must not allow such feelings to paralyze and cripple him. Right? It doesn't mean it's not there, but it shouldn't get in the way of being Krishna conscious. It is natural to mourn the demise of a son, but one must quickly overcome such unhappiness by taking shelter of Sri Krishna and praying to him for solace and strength. In this way, a devotee must train himself to always remember the lotus feet of the Lord in all conditions. Something may come up, but then we take shelter of Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? You know, whatever it is. We something we want, we can't get, but then we, you know, it bothers, we need to take shelter of Krishna. Any unfortunate situation, the feelings may come up, but then we take shelter of Krishna. Does that make sense? Vijay, yes.
Can we say that whatever happens, then still we follow our sadhana and like this, then we overcome all those
difficulties? Yes, but there's also that conscious effort of understanding that Krishna is still the shelter. Because we're doing the sadhana, we still may be lamenting, or we may be affected by those things. Though we're doing the sadhana, it means, in other words, some may be regulated enough that even in a bad situation, they can still maintain their regulation, right? So that's good, because the other person, when they get so disturbed, they can't maintain it. So that's the general. So that they're following it, then there'll be a benefit, but still, in both cases, it'll be much better if they take shelter of Krishna. You understand? Sadhana is performed, right? Regulation is there. But by taking shelter of Krishna, that will ensure that that regulation remains and the mentality is correct. Does that make sense? So in other words, one must be conscious of that. So it's not just a matter of stoically pushing through. It's a matter of stoically pushing through because by Krishna's grace, one has the ability to do that, right? Rather than just by one's own. You know, otherwise then it's my identity. I'm a regulated person. I have to do this. But it's not. I'm servant of Krishna. Therefore, I'm doing this. Does that make sense? Yeah. Right. Yeah. In this way, a devotee must train himself to always remember the lotus feet of the Lord in all conditions. Right? Means there's all circumstances, now it's all conditions. Right? Because no matter where you are, you remember Krishna, but also no matter what the mood and mentality is, I remember Krishna. Right? Because action means it's the situation, it's the mood, and it's the time. Right, so in all times, all places, all circumstances, that's what Krishna says. One must endeavor to see Krishna. Right, does that make sense? That's the fourth verse of the chapter Shloki. Right, so he's meaning in all these. So we have to cover that. In all circumstances, means we're trying to maintain the body, it's not being taken care of. Or we're trying to get certain things, it's not happening. So, but the point is, it's the mood also. Vijaya. The 17th limit is that one should not disrespect the devas and devis. Does this imply they should be worshipped? Right? That was the question the other day. Right? That was the discussion. We're saying they're not disrespected. They're respected. So that means they're worshipped. So then automatically, oh, then they're worshipped. No, we said they're not disrespected. So that means they're worshipped. No, we mean they're not disrespected. You understand? It's just automatic. You know, that's the... Raghunathas Babaji. The cultivation of single-minded devotion to Sri Krishna is most essential for the devotee. One must not worship the devas, considering them as separate and independent of the supreme control of Krishna. Right? That's the essential point, is that worshipping them, what does it mean? Like you were saying there, but Sanatana Goswami was worshipping Lord Shiva. Yes, as a Vaishnava. We worship Vaishnavas. You know, but he's a demigod. No, he's a we're worshiping because he's a Vaishnava, not because he's a demigod. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is we're worshiping because he's connected to the Lord. But if someone worships a sun god or this or that, it's only for help. Where's the connection? How are we seeing that? Krishna has to sanction. I'm going to the sun god asking for good health. Right? He can't give it. He has to ask Krishna if he can give it. Right? He's the officer in charge of it. Right, but he still has to get a sign. Right, you go to the FRO. There's a guy there that signs all the papers, fills them all out, puts all the stamps and all that. But who signs it? The guy above him. Right. So that's it. He does the work, and then once that's done, then he gives you all the stuff. So that's what the sun god does. Right. So the point is if it's all to Krishna, you can approach Krishna anyway, and because Krishna sanctioned it, the sun god will take care of it anyway, even without dealing with it. Does that make sense? So that point is we don't see them separately. There's no... Yes.
Yeah, the FRO dealer is called Gopal.
Gopal. Okay. Very good. Yeah, and the guy that signs it loves to argue philosophy. He caught me one day as I'm coming out. I didn't know who he was. You know, he's the head of the whole FRO. He's just sitting in the chair along with his other guys that are probably also big guys. You know, he says, come start some philosophy, you know, and it gets pretty strong, you know, like that. And then eventually, then we go. And then afterwards, the guy said, wow, he's in charge of the whole place. They were all, wow, you talked to the guy in charge. You know, so, oh my God, why didn't he tell me that?
He wouldn't have gotten as good a conversation if he told you.
Probably not. No, he wouldn't have. I would have been a little more careful. But it's one of those ones that Indians who love to argue, they love to get to that point. They love to, you know, butting heads, you know, like that. And then afterwards, yeah, that was great. You know. Okay. One must not worship the devas, considering them as separate and independent of the supreme control of Sri Krishna. Yet, in the presence of other persons worshipping the devas, the Krishna Bhakta must not denigrate the devatas. Right? Every deva must be regarded as an elevated devotee of Krishna and as the object of one's reverence. But at the same time, one should remember that only Sri Krishna is worthy of worship by all the devas. Right? In other words, if others are worshipping demigods, we don't say, oh, this is nonsense and bogus, because they don't know the supremacy of the Lord. So at least they're accepting the Lord's supremacy in the form of demigods. Right? You don't know who's running the government, but you accept the governance itself. Right? I'm willing to follow the laws of the government, but I actually don't know who's on top of the government. So that's better than the person who doesn't follow any rules. Right? But the devotee knows that the reason also we don't is because they're all devotees. All the demigods, the 33 million demigods, are all devotees. They only get there because of doing devotional service. Right? There's no non-devotees in the universal administration. Right? They're all devotees. Neophyte devotees, but devotees. Right? That's the whole point. You know, to manage the universe, you only have to be a neophyte devotee. Right? Right? You know, to preach, that you want to be a madhyama. You want to go back to Godhead, you know, develop prema, that's an uttama. But you want to manage that to neophyte. So the neophyte's fighting over this, I'm bigger, I'm more advanced. No, it's just that, you know, they're neophytes, you know, so. You see, they're all devotees. Indra comes, worships Krishna, of course, after making a lot of trouble. Right? Like that. Right. So all the devas worship Krishna, so they're devotees of Krishna, so therefore we respect them for that. But we don't worship, and those who are worshiping, we don't make snide comments. Vijaya, how may one stop being the cause of anxiety and disturbance to other living beings? The 18th limb. Raghunath Das, because right here is then we can disturb and annoy them, you know, because they're doing the deva worship. Sri Krishna is quickly pleased with persons who desist from causing pain and anxiety to other living entities out of compassion for them. Daya, compassion, is the foremost Vaishnava quality. That Krishna is quickly pleased if we deal nicely with everybody. Right? We deal properly. But if we don't, we're always arguing and fighting, then that's not good. One may say, well, no, but it's for a good cause. But guaranteed, you know, the two siblings really feel that they have, you know, just cause for their argument. Right? They're fighting like cats and dogs over it. The parents aren't pleased. If they get along and they're happy. Right? Like that. So that's the point. But they may say, no, but he did this, you know. But it doesn't matter. It's still, one has to have compassion and this and that and deal properly. Right? You don't expect it in little kids. But the point is it's the same principle. You know, compared to God, we're a bunch of little kids. You know, on a good day. Okay. Vijaya, how can we stop committing seva aparad and nam aparad, the 19th limb? Raghunath Das Babaji. Seva aparad is connected to deity worship, whereas nam aparad is related to shuddha bhakti and spiritual life in general. Both types of offense are to be shunned very carefully. There are 32 seva aparads, beginning with riding a palanquin into the Lord's temple and wearing shoes in the Lord's temple. And 10 nam-aparads, beginning with blaspheming the devotees who have dedicated their lives to preaching the glories of the Lord. Right? So seva-aparads are connected to proper worship of the deity and dealing with the devotees in connection with the deity, because there is an overlap, because deity worship is part of the devotional process. So there'll be something that's overlapped, and devotional process only has meaning if you're chanting Hare Krishna. So there'll be some common elements. But at the same time, as it specifically means deity worship, that's seva aparads, and your devotional life and dealing with devotees, that's nam aparad. Does that make sense? Vijaya. A devotee should not tolerate that Krishna and the Vaishnavas are criticized. The 20th limb. Does this instruction imply that the devotees must counter immediately? So in other words, here someone's doing, if they're being offensive, the devotee doesn't tolerate that. Raghunath Das Babaji. Those who blaspheme Krishna and the Vaishnavas are non-believers and inimical to Krishna. This offensive attitude must not be tolerated for any reason. The devotee has to renounce such company strictly. Right. So that's it. So that's why, Does that make sense? So we just avoid such association. And if something comes up, we just leave. There's always people get up at all times and leave under all circumstances. There's always, there's bathrooms to go to, appointments to attend, phone calls to make. There's always something to get you away from the situation. You can't say, well, I couldn't get away. You know, of course, if you're tied up there and they're sitting there, that's another thing. You know.
On the bus.
On the bus. Yeah, we can. You can always stand up and go to the front of the bus.
In the taxi?
Not always.
In the taxi, same taxi? Someone asked me, they were riding in the same taxi and the other person starts talking.
You tell the taxi driver to stop the car and get out. You know, or throw them out. You know, whichever it is. You know, but the point is then you just get out. You know what I'm saying? It's always possible. Just it may not be for one's material success practical. But the point is it better to be materially successful and then be contaminated by, you know, Vaishnav aparad? Or is it better to get out and get another taxi? You know, because generally speaking, it's not that every taxi is full of somebody who's going to be blaspheming Krishna. Right? So in other words, if it's the taxi driver himself, you stop the taxi and get out. And then the point is he wants to be paid. So you tell him he wants to be paid, he shuts up. Otherwise, if he wants to talk, you're walking. Does that make sense? You know, and if it's someone else in the taxi, why is someone else in the taxi? You know, you hail a taxi, there's supposed to be no one in it, right? You know? Unless you're sharing. But I only heard of that in India. Do they do that in the West?
Yeah,
then you just get out. It's easy enough to stop, especially if you're in Calcutta, because you're going to stop every 10 feet anyway because of the traffic. So then it's easy enough to get out. I've done it so many times. You just get up and walk off. Taxi drivers yelling and screaming and this and that. And so, and it works. Vijay, is there a particular connection between the first 20 limbs of bhakti and the remaining 44 limbs, right? Because it's been made into two sections. In the first 20, the first 10 are what have to be established so that you're actually on the devotional, the practice. And the second 10 are what to avoid so that the quality of your practice develops. Right? So now, what's the difference between these first 20 and the last 44? Raghunath Das Babaji. The latter 44 limbs are contained within the first 20 limbs. They are mentioned independently to highlight their significance and to help one understand them better. Right. So in other words, they're already. If you're following the first 20, you're already following the 44. But to make sure the detail of it is understood, they're highlighted. So you bring out their specialness. Right. The thirty limbs from the first 21st up to the 50th, inclusive, may be categorized under the banner of Archana Marg, the process of deity worship. Right, so then the first 20 situate you. The next ones are expansions on those, but of those expansions, 30 is details of deity worship. Okay. The 32nd to the 46th limbs inclusive have straightforward, clear meanings. Right, so they're just things that, you know, about chanting or this or that, other things. The 32nd, one should sing devotional bhajans and kirtans in glorification of the Lord for his pleasure. 33rd, one should participate in samkirtan with one's fellow devotees. 34th, one should practice japa meditation. In other words, chanting nam mantra very softly, only for one's own hearing, whilst counting upon one's beads or fingers. The 35th, one should offer prayers with great feelings of humility and meekness, thus offering one's very self in complete submission to the Lord. The 35th. One should practice contemplation of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord. The 36th, one should practice meditation upon the service, name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord, including rendering manasi seva within the mind. Hey, so those are all straightforward, right? So they just are, in other words, these are more direct activities within whatever's been explained before. Just like the 20 are explained, then the next 30 explain the more detail of that in Archan. Then this is more detail within, you know, connected to the Archan in the service itself. So it's more direct. The 47th limb, dasya, devotional service and servitude, is of two kinds. Karmapana, offering the results of one's fruitive activities, and kaikarya, to be constantly engaged in the service of the deity with body, mind, and words. Right? So the one is that I'm doing the service, then I'm giving to the Lord. Right? That's renunciation. That's generally the neophyte position. Then the, what was it? Kaikarya, is that I'm doing the service for Krishna. It's already his results. Right? It's not mine. So that would be the naishkarmya. So that's generally taken as the madhyama platform. Right? So in other words, the point is you could do it and then give the result, or the result's already Krishna's before you started. So the second is better. But both of them are good. Point is if it gets to Krishna, it'll be good. And if you continue it, the one will turn into the other anyway. The karmarpana will turn into the kaikarya. Yes?
The desire for results is to feed the false identity?
It depends. The desire for the results can be that Krishna gets a nice result. Right? It just depends. Its point is this. If I'm servant of Krishna, I just want the nice results for Krishna. If I have some other identity along with that, then there'll be that element to try to take care of that. Yeah. The 48th limb, Shakya, devotional service and friendship, is of two moods. Vivasa, as confidential servant, and Mitravritti, as well-wishing friend. Right? So confidential servant means friend, means you're a servant, but a confidential servant. So that's considered within the realm of Shakya. Right? Because the point is, there's that it's mixed with service, just like Lord Krishna has friends. So they're those who are junior to him. So they render service, but at the same time as their friends. Or one who's a well-wisher. You know, so then that's more intimate. Like that. The 49th limb, Atmanivedana, indicates the devotional mood of complete surrender. Atma specifies the self, but not just the jiva soul, but Atma also indicates both Dehanishta, Ahamta, the concept that I am this material body, and Dehanishta Mamata, the concept this body and its possessions are mine. Okay, Dehanishta Ahamta and Devanishta Mamata. Okay. But no, it's deha nishta. Nishta is fixed in the bodily concept of life, right? So I am this body, and this body is mine. Right? So therefore, it's nishta, one's fixed.
Advanced.
Yeah. These two concepts should nivedana, surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord. In other words, I am Krishna, and everything about, you know, that means I'm not this body, and I belong to Krishna. So everything I have is connected to Krishna. Vijaya, Gurudev, kindly explain more about Dehanishta Ahamta. I am this body, and Dehanishta Mamata. This body and its possessions are mine. Okay? Do we see how it's going? Right? Those things that you should do in devotional service that establish you in devotional service. Right? And then those things you should avoid. Now, the next 30 are giving the deity the details of that in deity worship, right? Then the next items then are giving details of that, more kind of like the mood, the attitude, the involvement, which elements of those are the most important, right? So it gets more and more condensed, right? So now he's going on this Atmanivedana. Raghunathas Babaji. The occupier of deha, the material body, is called dehi. He is the jiva indicated by aham, I, which is the sense of self, the ego. Dehi, one who's in the body. Yeah, it says like grihi means one who's in the grihastha ashram. Like that, so dehi, one who's in the body. Like that. When the jiva incorrectly identifies itself as being the material body, this is known as deha nishta ahamta. This then leads to the second illusory concept under which the material body and everything related to the material body are claimed as one's own rightful possessions. Right? Like that. So in other words, the first one is I am the body, then that means the body and everything connected are mine. Right? The self, the material body, okay. self, the material body, and its possessions must be purified by being offered to Sri Krishna. One should give up the false material identity and illusory concepts of I and mine. Thus, in devotional life, one should assert oneself with the real I, the identity of being the servant of Krishna. Right? So, in other words, there's the body, and then there's the results of that body. Right? Or what you can gain from the body. So we also see here's the sambandha is wrong because I think I am the body, and one's prayojan is wrong because everything is mine. Right? So the results are mine. So if I'm servant of Krishna, I'm not the body, I'm servant of Krishna. And the results of the endeavor of the body belong to Krishna. Right? Then that's the correct situation. You see? It's not something different. All it is that the natural state, all this is when we say I and mine, the technical term is, atmanishta, or no, what is it, dehanishta, ahamta, you know, that's I, or I'm the controller, or envy, attached, fear, anger, these are all that. And then the others, I'm the enjoyer, right, the results are mine. Like that, that is the dehanishta mamata. Does that make sense? So just depending on which aspect you're bringing out, you use that context to explain it. Does that make sense? Okay. Thus, in devotional life, one should assert oneself with the real I, the identity of being the servant of Sri Krishna, subsisting on Krishna Prasad. Right. In addition, one's body, mind, words, and possessions are to be surrendered to Sri Krishna to be utilized as instruments for his service, thus purifying oneself of the illusory concept of mine. Right? If I identify as Krishna's servant and just maintain the body by taking Krishna Prasad, a devotee whose consciousness is thus immersed is on the platform of Atmani Vedanam. So that's what's meant there. So that means then one considers the bucket and the hull of it in the bucket not to be mine, but it's Krishna's. But it's Krishna's quota for ourselves so we can maintain body and soul together so we can render service. Right? That makes sense? Yeah, of course. Vijay, how can we offer Krishna our most exquisite and favorite objects, the 50th limb? Raghunath Das Babaji. In this world, whatever special object that has attracted our attention and attachment should be offered to Sri Krishna and considered as his own property, as his, meaning Krishna. This is known as offering a favorable article to Krishna, right? Because we're attracted to it, we're attached to it, so it cultivates that mundane. So if that's offered to Krishna, then it works very nice. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. So whatever it is, use it for Krishna, offer it to Krishna. Vijaya, how does a person make a wholehearted endeavor for Krishna, the 51st limb? Okay. I think it's there. Okay, 30, what did he say? 30 limbs up the 50th. Maybe you can't, oh, I'm banner. Oh, 30 from the first, okay. 30, so that means 51. Banner, Rasha, the person. The 32nd to the 46th. Straightforward, clear. Okay. So that's what we've gotten up to. So now we're going into the 50th. Okay. Yes.
For the previous one, does that mean if we acquire like a new phone or a laptop, we have to give it to the pujari to touch to the lotus feet?
No, it's just this offer to the Lord. Means, in other words, you see that it's for his service like that. It's not so important that you, those kind of things. You know, means you can offer, you can put it there like that. It doesn't have to touch the feet. Why does the phone have to touch the feet like that? Because it touches feet, then you touch it with your head. It works good like that. Okay. You know what I'm saying? That's not so. I mean, it makes us feel it's been offered, but that's why there's subtler forms of, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's like Krishna eats with his eyes, so he doesn't have to touch your phone. So, you know what I'm saying? You know, like that. But the principle is that it should be offered.
Yeah. And put a Krishna sticker on it.
Yeah, Krishna sticker on it. I say Krishna, what do you call it? The picture? You know.
Background.
The wallpaper.
Yeah, the wallpaper. Something like that. Only problem is then you have the wallpaper and then you have all these things, yeah. Icons all over the space. So I've never quite understood that one. So. Okay. How does a person make a wholehearted endeavor for Krishna, the 51st limb? Raghunath Das Babaji. Whether the Vedic or ordinary duties of this material world, one's activity should be performed in the manner that is favorable for Krishna. Krishna consciousness. In this way, the activities satisfy Sri Krishna are known as making all endeavors, even taking risk for the sake of Krishna. So whether the Vedic or ordinary duties of this world, that was just ordinary day-to-day that you have to do, like take out the garbage or this or that, it's connected to Krishna. And then the Vedic ones, we're doing the rituals, the activities, the sadhana in connection to Krishna. So if we do that, then Krishna becomes very pleased, because then the life is being connected. So in doing all those, there's some risk is to be taken. So now we're taking that risk for Krishna's pleasure rather than for ourselves. Does that make sense? Is this one of those mornings or everybody just understands everything, or it's just we've already been through this topic before at 2 years of Nectar Devotion, so it's more familiar. Okay, because you're just kind of getting that. You're getting the look like, you know, it's either no one understands it or, you know, everyone understands it. So it's just kind of which one it was. Okay. What is the meaning of, in every condition, we should be a surrendered soul, the 52nd limb? Raghunath Das Babaji. When one is absorbed in the thoughts, O Lord, I am yours in all respects, and, O Lord, I surrender myself unto you completely. This attitude of resignation is called being a surrendered soul. Right? So, in other words, on all respects, in all situations, and in completely. Right? So, in other words, all situations I'm surrendered, and in those situations I'm completely surrendered. So that's what one's trying to do. That's the surrendered soul. Vijaya. How is Tulsi Devi to be served, the 53rd limb? Raghunath Das Babaji. Tulsi may be served in 9 ways. Seeing Tulsi, touching Tulsi, meditating upon Tulsi, glorifying Tulsi, bowing down before Tulsi, hearing the glorification of Tulsi, planting Tulsi, tasting Tulsi, and worshipping Tulsi daily. All these services to Tulasi Devi are ultimately meant for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. Thus, the glories of Tulsi Devi are endless. I wonder if this comes up because you have Tulsa, Oklahoma. So therefore it's Tulsi instead of Tulasi. Right.
Maybe there's a connection.
Maybe there's a connection, yeah.
Okay. Do you have a lot of Tulsi there?
No, but it's just that when you see that T-U-L-S, you know, then it's Tulsa, you know, instead of, you know, so Tulsi instead of Tulasi, right?
It's a pretty dry place, too. Hmm?
So it needs water. So maybe that's the connection. Right? Yes.
If you plant Tulsi, do you have a responsibility to take care of Tulsi? The plant.
Why would you plant if you're not going to take care? I mean, it means we had a guy in America who used to, you know, wear a pot on his head named Johnny Appleseed. So he had a big bag of apples, and he walked from one side of America to the other and just planted apple trees. You know, so he didn't take responsibility. But I guess people would like the apple trees, but you know, I'm saying so. You know, Johnny Tulsi seed. Or something. You know, I'm saying I just have to play. There's dirt. You know, no, it's you only plant because you're going to take care. Right?
Yeah, makes sense.
Yes.
Sometimes a person comes in. There's some Tulsi in your house and there's side paper. I had an instruction, you should keep the seeds, not the plant. Is that?
You do have that aspect, that you can function with that aspect. Just depends who you're giving it to. If you know them and know they'll take care nicely, it's not a problem. If you're not sure, then that's the point. Because if she grows, then it's fine. Like that. But it's not so much of a point. Point is don't give her to anybody that you don't know if they'll take care nicely or not.
Especially tools in those nine ways are all kind of equal.
Well, the worshipping Tulsi daily, that would definitely be an outstanding thing, because then it's going on, the regulated element is there. But all of these, then, just by remembering, by seeing, by touching, all these things, then one's benefited. So in other words, one would do all of them. The idea is how much of them you can do, that's what you do. So if you can worship on a daily basis, then you would do that. It's not that you don't go to Tulsi Puja because I can just kind of remember it like that.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, no, no. The Tulsi Puja is there. You're already there, so don't leave. You know, that would be. You know, just like by remembering Prashad, you get benefit. But, you know, so you get the spiritual benefit. Yeah. Yes.
Is it a new introduction that you get three sets of beads, three sets of tulsis at initiation before that time, and you bhaktas only get once around the neck?
That's just somehow another how devotees amongst their own culture define who's who, so you can tell the difference, because you know, it was more just for that, you know, so you can tell hierarchy, because then it was, you know, non-devotees, you know, uninitiated devotees, first initiated, second, because it had some meaning then, because second initiated and they said were very much respected. So it's somehow the last, but it's not a tradition so much, you know, practiced in India. Because devotees are special anyway, it's just more special. So, but, I mean, if they're practicing that, it's not a problem. But it's not a required necessity. But at the time of initiation, you get neck beads. Because previously, also, a lot of times, they wouldn't wear neck beads until they were ready to be initiated. Right? Because the neck beads represent, I understand, the material world is a place of misery. Right? Does that make sense? That's it. I'm convinced that the material world has nothing to offer. It's a place of misery, right? That's what the neck beads represent. So therefore, I take up the, you know, wearing of the tilak, which indicates taking the upward path. Does that make sense? Yes.
At our gift shop, we would get a lot of tourists who would just buy tulsi mala as jewelry. Mm. Should this kind of purchase be discouraged?
It's one of those, it means, I'm sure by being in contact with Tulsi, then there's a Gyata Sukriti, but at the same time as what goes on with those neck beads is another thing, you know. So it's hard to say. Like now and again, sometimes you see in the common media, and there's, you know, straight, that means by all appearances just a karmi, then you see neck beads, so you're not sure, is that a devotee or is that just the guy who bought neck beads? You know? Yeah. Yes.
Like a myth I hear, so if you say that people who are non-devotees were to see a stiviti meat, the bead you break and call, have you ever heard something like that?
But point is why should she break and go? Then where's she gonna, you know what I'm saying? That I don't know. The point is the neck beads indicate something. They're not just jewelry. It's not just you wear, then you're a devotee. It indicates that you understand that material life is not your focus, it's spiritual life. That's the idea. So it's one of those that traditionally it wouldn't be done, because it would be there and only those who are interested in neck beads would buy them, you know, because they're devotional. But at the same time, be a neck bead shop out on the road and some tourists come through and say, oh, nice beads, and they buy some. It's not, you know, does that make sense? So it's just something that's not necessarily made available, but it's one of those that, you know, as an individual you might not do it, but if someone else is doing it, then, you know, you don't worry about it.
Like that. Whereas some people say that it's Kanti Mala, so it should sit on here, it shouldn't be like this.
Well, there's two kinds. If the Kanti Mala sits on the Kanta, it's that U-shaped cone on the neck there. That's the Kanta. Mm-hmm. So the kanti mala means that it's touching there. Then you have other beads. So that's why it says kanti mala and beads on the chest. Why it's mentioned as two things. They're two different things. Mm-hmm. Like that. So you wear those and can wear the other ones. Like that. But the other ones don't replace. The like things like Shri's, Madhva's, others, they also wear tulsi neck beads, but only during puja. So that's why they have the big ones like that, because they put them on, do the puja, when the puja is over, they take them off. Because right. They don't wear them all day, because their ideas are tulsi. I'm going to the bathroom, I'm sleeping, I don't wear them at that time. Right? But the difference is then mudra, which means what the neck beads indicate, or tapa, means the material world's a place of misery, of burning like a forest fire, you know, like that. They do by branding. Hmm. So that's how you know that they're Vaishnavas, because they have the brands. So for them, they only wear the tulsi during puja, like that. So they sometimes complain about us, we're always wearing. But the point is this is our mudra. That's just in Vrindavan, that's the mudra. You know, Vrindavan is more sweet and all that, you can't expect us to be doing this branding jazz. You know, that's for awe and reverence. And so then if you explain it like that, they accept that. But if you just say, you know, otherwise, they can't understand. Okay. So you'll see that. So as long like that, generally that's not neck beads. They're close, you know. I mean, if you're in a place where you can't be seen with neck beads, then you wear longer ones, you know. Like that. Yes.
Is it correct to say that just as Krishna is independent, he's not obligated to manifest in his holy name if someone's chanting in an offensive mood? Can we say the same thing about Tulsi, is that she has the choice whether to appear, whether she's pleased or not?
The thing is it's not she's appearing, Tulsi is directly her. Just like Shaligram. The deity, then Krishna may enter or not.
Okay.
It means, of course, the form is automatically him. Mm-hmm. But when you're doing installing deities, that means you're taking responsibility, you're asking Krishna to always be there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Means if he's not installed, means if you're conscious, he's there, and if you're not conscious, he's not there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why on one level, if someone has, you know, quote-unquote uninstalled deities, and they don't take care so well, the point is Krishna's not there. Whenever they do manifest pure devotion, he's there. When they're not, he's not there.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's installed, he's always there. So that's why then you have to put in that attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So you could say on that side it's taken care of. But the point is Shaligram, whether you understand or not. So the Shaligram sitting in the Gandaki, the Shaligram sitting in the altar, the Shaligram sitting in the guy's shop,
mm-hmm.
they're directly the Lord. So Tulsi is directly Tulsi.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So that's why one's a little tends to be more careful with them.
Okay.
Because we're thinking, oh, nice, they're wearing tulsi beads all the time, but how long will they wear them?
Mm-hmm.
As a girl, it's a matter of fashion. How long till the fashion goes out, or how long till she has to wear something else?
Mm-hmm.
You wear it a couple of days, you take it off, it goes in the thing with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's a guy, he'll wear it for a while until, you know, some other thing comes up as fashion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, next you'll see him with a, you know, leather thing with spikes on it, you know. Something around the neck, but, you know, hey.
So, how does that relate to the holy name? Is it in the same category? Shaligram,
girl Shiva? Also might wear one of those. But, yeah. Sorry?
With the holy name, is it in the same category as Shaligram Shiva?
Means it's Krishna, but there, whether it's the chit potency is empowering it.
Uh-huh.
You know? Does that make sense?
Yes.
I mean, in other words, everything is Krishna, so it's a matter of the chit potency involved.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we'll say it's direct or not. But the point is that the Tulsi is directly Tulsi. Like that. So that's why, you know, one generally is more careful. Does that make sense? You know, yeah, you're saying, so in one sense you're taking a risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you say about Gorni Thai, but the point is Gorni Thai, they're men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can take care of themselves. Like that, you know, Lord Nityananda, you know, he did okay.
Yeah.
You could handle Jagai and Madai, you know, like that. But you don't hear stories of, you know, Tulsi so much.
Right.
Like that.
I just want to clarify, we have a story of Gopala Guru who was chanting, or he was justifying Lord Chaitanya's chanting, or someone's chanting in the washroom.
Yeah, it was Gopala Guru.
Okay. So Vedic mantras, they're of a different category?
Yes, they're a different category. You can't chant them in the toilet.
Can you explain how that works?
Because of the formality. The point is that Krishna, he's in everything, so everything's functioning on Nam. So even these Vedic mantras, they're only working because of Nam. Because Nam then is the potency in the Kama Gayatri. Kama Gayatri is in the other Gayatris. And so then from the Gayatris, then the Gayatris have the Bija, right? And then of all the Bijas, then Om is the impersonal manifestation of that. So then that's what you come to here. So it has that formality and everything. You know, it has to be, everything has to be in the mode of goodness. That just like the new devotee can chant Hare Krishna, but not the Gayatri mantra, even though the Hare Krishna mantra is actually a higher mantra than the Gayatri mantra. But when he attains the qualities of steadiness, the mode of goodness and that, then he can chant the Gayatri, you'll get the benefit. Otherwise, you don't get the benefit. Hare Krishna, you get the benefit anyway. But the Gayatri mantras, unless everything's just right, it won't work. Does that make sense? It's more specialized. Does that make sense? You know, so like, you can take your trunk out of the Mojave Desert. You can't take your 14-cylinder Ferrari. You know, it's too specialized. It doesn't work in general conditions. Right? But the point is, the holy name, being the origin of all of them, it can function anyway, because everything is based on it. You know, everything other than the name itself is Namatmika. But the others are specialized for a specific situation. Just like, let's say if you're worshipping the sun god, you wouldn't use Shiva mantras. It has to be the sun mantras. Right? And if you're doing that particular ritual, you have to chant the mantras for that ritual. We could do anything and just chant Hare Krishna or use Gopal mantra, and it'll work. Right? But as you drop down into that Vedic, then it has to be the specific mantra with the specific qualifications for the specific situation. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Vijaya, how can the scriptures be given proper respect, the 54th limb? Raghunath Das Babaji, texts which determine, analyze, and establish pure devotion to the Supreme Lord are Shastra. Amongst the many Shastras, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the foremost, since it is the refined essence of the Vedanta. Those elevated saints who are steeped in the immortal ambrosia of the Bhagavat Purana, in other words, the Srimad Bhagavatam, are not attracted to any other scriptures. Right? So in other words, you respect the scriptures because they're showing devotional service. So that's why they're respected. Right? Knowledge in general is respected because of the knowledge. But the point is that knowledge should be for Krishna. So that's why scriptures are in their own special category. And of that, the Bhagavatam is the best. Right. So, therefore, you don't have to worry about all others, because then these great devotees are only interested in the Bhagavatam anyway. You know, so that means Bhagavatam and those books connected to Bhagavatam. So all the Goswami literature is all descriptions of the Bhagavatam. Even Chaitanya Charitamrita is telling how the Bhagavatam is lived by the Gaudiya Vaishnava. So basically, you can say it's all Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? Vijaya, how should Mathura, the birthplace of Sri Krishna, be glorified, the 55th limb? Raghunath Das Babaji, here, remember, glorify the transcendental qualities of Mathura. Having a desire to visit Mathura on pilgrimage, smearing one's body with the dust of Mathura, residing in Mathura and serving the sacred land, all these activities fulfill one's most coveted wishes. Equally significant spiritually is Sri Mayapur Dham. Okay, so hearing, remember, glorifying, having a desire to visit, smearing one's body from the dust, residing there, and serving. Like that. And serving is cleaning, beautifying. Like that. The others have been mentioned. Vijaya, what does it mean to serve the Vaishnavas, the 56th limb? Raghunath Das Babaji. The Vaishnavas are very dear to Sri Krishna. By serving them, a person obtains bhakti to the Supreme Lord. The Shastras declare that the worship of Sri Vishnu is supreme amongst all varieties of worship, but even higher than the worship of Sri Vishnu is the worship of the servants of Vishnu, the Vaishnavas. Right. So, means Vaishnavas give devotion to Krishna, because it's by their blessings Krishna is pleased. Right? Krishna is bestowing it. Right? But he's only bestowing it when he's pleased, and he's pleased when you worship the Vaishnavas. So that's why worship of the Vaishnavas is higher than worship of Vishnu. Right? Because worship of Vishnu, you may or may not please him. Worship of the Vaishnavas, you will please him. Vijaya, how does one perform ceremonies in glorification of the Lord according to one's financial position? The 57th limb. Raghunath Das Babaji. Purchase ingredients for offering to the Lord according to one's means. After worshipping the Lord and offering him delicacies, his pure devotees, the saintly Vaishnavas, must be served prasadam to their full satisfaction. This is known as Mahotsava, a grand celebration. It is the best form of celebration in the world. Right? So offering ingredients to the Lord and then offering those remnants to the Vaishnavas. So that's a festival, right? Maha Utsava. Ut means to rise above. Sava means material misery. So Utsava means that which lifts you above material misery. So a Maha Utsava, right, is then something that's done with the Lord and distributing the prasad. So that's like that. So that means just a bucket of halava can be a mahotsava in itself, right?
Festival every day.
Yeah, festival every day, yes. Okay. Okay, so that means you're purchasing ingredients according to one's means, you know? And performing activities according to one's means. So that's simple. Vijaya, how should one honor the month of Kartik, the 58th limb? Raghunath Das Babaji. Another name for Kartik is Urja. The devotees take special vows of renunciation and increase their devotional activities of hearing, chanting, remembering, circumambulation, etc. to celebrate the pastimes of Sri Damodar, Sri Krishna. This practice is also known as Urja Dhara, worship in the month of Kartik. Right. So in other words, you're trying to increase the devotional, so that means to do that you decrease the ordinary. Right, because otherwise your day's already full. So how do you increase the devotional unless you decrease the ordinary? So that's the idea. So it's not the renunciation that's important. It's not the, oh, how renounced is his Kartik Vrata, right? It's a matter of how much is increasing devotion. Does that make sense? So eating once a day increases, because then if you cut out two times a day, then that means right there at minimum is just half an hour just eating. Now, if you just have to go and sit in that, so you could get another half. But if you're involved in the process, then that means, you know, serving, cleaning up, cooking, market, all these different things. So it takes much more time. So just by reducing that, then you reduce the time spent. So then you can spend more time for chanting. Does that make sense? So it's not about the renunciation. It's about increasing the hearing and chanting. Does that make sense? Right. Sometimes you make a mistake, think, no, it's how austere you are. No, it's about, like, I think it was one devotee was in Los Angeles. He's doing the Chaturmas, you know, has all the list of all the items and all that's being very strict. So, you know, no ghee, no this, no that, no salt, no nothing, only eating once a day, you know, whatever it is. So then somebody came along at some point, there was, you know, a program and all that, and then afterwards this little prasad, they're giving out a little bit to everybody. So this devotee refused to take prasad because I'm fasting and that, plus it's fried, it's this, it's that. And so then, I'm not sure if Prabhupada was right there at the time or it got back to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, this is nonsense. Point is we're trying to increase devotional service. So that renunciation is just so that you don't make an endeavor to go out for that. But if it comes to you like that, you take a little bit. They didn't ask you to eat the whole plate, right? They're giving you a little bit, so you're honoring prasad, right? So that's appropriate. Okay. Vijay, how should the appearance days of the Lord be celebrated, the 59th limb? Raghunath Das Babaji, for the appearance days of the Lord, for the surrendered... For the surrendered devotees, the Supreme Lord's appearance days, such as Krishna Janmashtami, the eighth day of the dark fortnight in the month of Bhadra, and Gaur Purnima, the full moon day in the month of Falgun, are very special and spiritually significant. They are carefully celebrated with spiritual sobriety and devotional fervor by those who are dedicated and also known as Sri Janma Yatra. So in other words, the point is spiritual sobriety, carefully celebrated spiritual sobriety and devotional fervor. Because one may say, no, but he's not giving any detail. No, but the point is detail is there. What is important is what's the attitude. Right? If that's there, then detail you can apply. Vijaya, how should the deities be served and worshipped with proper faith, the 60th limb? Raghunath Das Babaji. When performing deity worship service, the devotee must always remain enthusiastic and maintain a loving attitude towards the Lord. A sincere soul is not bestowed the pathetic and worthless gift of impersonal liberation through deity worship, but is rewarded with the priceless transcendental gem of bhakti by the Supreme Lord. Right? So therefore, one is enthusiastic, right? Steady enthusiastic, because one gets bhakti from worshiping the Lord. Right? Steady and enthusiastic there, a loving attitude, because you're interacting with the Lord, right? Devotees want to do, but what about me and Krishna? So deity worship is me and Krishna. You're doing something for Krishna, right? Through the spiritual master, but this is the direct aspect, right? As we discussed before, the relationship is never direct, but you can directly offer service, but the connection is not direct. It's always through the spiritual master and the parampara. Right? So therefore, one should always be enthusiastic. One is not pleased if, you know, today the guys come out to serve prasad and, you know, one bucket comes out, dropped on the ground. Then they disappear for a while. Then another bucket comes out, dropped on the ground. Then they come out with one spoon, drop it in the bucket. Go back in, look for another spoon, come back out. There isn't another spoon. Right? Okay, then pick up the bucket, start to serve, whichever one's closer. You know what I'm saying? One's not impressed, right? So the thing is, you know, it's not proper relationship. So it's not proper relationship with Krishna if we're not enthusiastic, right? And that devotion is done, that personal element has to be there. Right? And by that, one's not getting liberation, one's getting devotion, right? Taking the Vedic aspects, you know, of grihastha life or other aspects of life, we may be enthusiastic to perform those, but being done with naishkarmya gets you liberation. Right? So much deity worship has so much more meaning. Does that make sense? It has so much more meaning. Because it's not dealing with that at all. You're developing that position in the spiritual world. The other one, the Vedic, is removing you from the material world. You do that to please Krishna, that aspect's the devotion. You understand? But the ritual itself is simply freeing you from the material world. That's why you become purified by the Vedic rituals or Vedic endeavor. But deity worship, it's not so much that you're purified as you are established in devotion. Right, those things come on the side, like it mentions. You just stand in front of the deity at Mangalartik and chant. You know, just by being there, millions of lifetimes of sin go away. You clap your hands and dance, even more millions goes away. So it's not the deity worship. Those things are side. That's just happening on the side. It's going away because it's increasing your attraction and attachment to Krishna. Does that make sense? Like that. The Vedic, it's the ritual aspect. You have to see that it's right. Because then... Okay. Vijaya. Maharaj, kindly explain how we can relish the nectar of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the exalted company of those rasik devotees who are forever steeped within its divine rasa, the 61st limb. Raghunath Das Babaji. The Vedas are a wet wish-fulfilling desire tree. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the deliciously ripened fruit of this desire tree. To savor this nectar is impossible in the company of those who do not have any actual taste for it. In fact, one becomes an offender if one tries to do so. The sincere aspirant must find a pure devotee. One is imbued with rasa and thirsty for hearing Krishna's sublime pastimes. And in this association relish the succulent sweetness of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In non-devotional assemblies and mundane social gatherings, a discussion upon and reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam will have a negative or, at best, no effect upon spiritual progress. At best, no effect. Yeah. So in other words, it's not something just for general reading. It's something for those who are interested. Right? Then you get the benefit. So just like we're giving a lecture, but the people who are standing there, it's voluntary, so they're interested. So they get, as long as they're interested, they get benefit. When they're not interested, they generally go away. So in an assembly where that's not going to happen, you don't bring it up like that. Some interest, then you explain.
Yeah. So, but still preaching goes on.
Yeah, but still, people can walk away.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it's just discussion.
It's just like this. You're having a recitation, so that's what's going on.
Mm.
So if people walk away, it still goes on.
Mm.
If you're having a party, it's the party that's going on. You pull out a Bhagavatam, people walk away. There's no party. Right? So it's okay. Slightly different. You know, in other words, those who are interested in Bhagavatam, by hearing Bhagavatam in their association, you develop the interest in it. Because you have the interest, you're able to give preach and give that to others. Right? The reason that you can preach, that's why Prabhupada said that book distributors should be reading the books. Otherwise, if he's not reading the books, he's only selling the books. Right? Because while he's reading, he could be selling more books. Point is if you're not convinced, how you'll convince others? You know, unless you're a good salesman. Right, so the point is you find this of value, then you'll be able to convince them it's of value. Right, so that's why it's important.
Alright.
Yes.
It's an interesting story about Senior Vaishnava. Many people came to him and wanted to talk Prajalpana a lot. And after a few moments, just as they start, he figures out that's what the discussion is going to be. He says, okay, just before that, let's read the Bhagavatam for it, like 5 or 10 minutes. And he found that after 2 minutes, they said, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I have to go, you know, this and that. And they just left.
Yeah. That's good. It works.
Yeah.
It works. Okay, I'm pretty close. Okay, so we'll end here. And then it looks like we should, unless we get into an issue, we should finish this evening.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai
Nityai Gaurav ki.
Hare Krishna.